Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Sandpits Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of All the Small Games. My name is Andrew Levins, and my mic is, for some reason, trying to run away from me, but I caught it. All right, everyone, it's been caught. Joining me today is someone with the coldest mic in town. That's what they call him. John Valenzuela.
How's it going, Levins? Good.
Good man.
Good save on that mic, buddy.
Yeah, no, it was falling away from my and I was like kind of chasing it with my mouth. Good vibe.
Man, I believe, based on discussions we've had, that this is going to be a freaking whopping ep today.
Yeah, man. No thanks to you.
Hey, screw you, man.
Yesterday, I wrote to John and I said, hey, man, I'm all set to record tomorrow. And John was like, I should be too. I just haven't played a game yet. But this morning, I awoke to the news that not only had John started a game, he finished it too.
Damn straight. This is all the small games. We should, like, talking about games you can finish in one night is the reason we exist.
Absolutely.
And then we talk about stuff like Psychonauts 2.
Man, I knew that there's so many games that I started and really liked that I'm like, oh yeah, I'll finish that by the end of the year. And the end of the year is rapidly approaching.
Yeah, it's coming up terrifyingly fast, and I'm already looking at what's left and going like, oh, I have no time.
Yeah. So I've been just burning through games. I finished Solar Ash, which I talked about last week.
Ooh, nice segue from burning through games.
That's very true. I mean, better than last week's segue about burning, if I remember correctly.
Oh, God.
I have started a brand new game that I've been very excited about. It reminds me a lot of 2 years ago when I was anticipating harder than anything else the final addition to the Shovel Knight Treasure Trove collection, the King of Hearts installment. This year, I was very excited for another Shovel Knight game, and that is Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon, very amazingly referred to as Shovel Knight Picnic Panic a couple of minutes ago before we hit record by John. Is Picnic Panic, is that the name of the Messenger expansion?
Yeah, wait, maybe?
Is that where you're getting Picnic Panic from?
I'm getting it from the comic strip Akewood. But I think you might actually be right, because I remember at the time being like, yeah, it's the Messenger Picnic Panic.
Yeah, okay, cool. Oh, there we go. Great. I've also played Loop Hero, the Switch port of that.
Very intrigued.
I've started Unsighted.
Oh, okay.
And I have played a big chunk of Flynn, Son of Crimson. These are my big goals for the end of the year.
Right.
And I've even managed to fit in a card game, one made by an indie game developer that we know as Jan Willem Nijman. Mm-hmm. Is that his name?
I think so, yeah. It is.
He just released his first physical card game with a small team of other developers called Dust Biters, and it arrived in the mail yesterday, and my son and I have played a few rounds. It's very cool. So lots to talk about this episode. John, spin the wheel. I know you've just been busily jotting down
hold on.
All the things we just said.
What am I saying? What am I talking about, buddy?
The game that I forget if you even said the name of.
I didn't. So I'm going to be talking about the game that I started and finished in the space of a night, which is XO1. And I've also, as we've discussed on previous eps, we've talked about how The game Moonlighter has often been like a sort of, we just didn't get it when it first came out. So this week I actually sat down and put in some time to see if I could understand what all the hype was about with Moonlighter. Now let's spin that damn wheel and oh look at that, it landed on Loop Hero for the Switch. The thing I'm very curious about. How lucky. Go for it.
I also just spun a little my own wheel and it reminded me to say, hey, it's our 100th episode.
Hey.
Congratulations, John. Well done.
Hey.
Congratulations.
Wonderful.
We made it 100 episodes. 100 small games. Actually, it's more like fucking 500 small games.
Yeah.
Would you say that? I mean, I guess we used to talk about like 12 games at a time in the early episodes.
Yeah, the early eps were definitely like 2 hour, 10 games each kind of thing. But I reckon that's balanced out by some of the later eps where it's like one game each. So I'd say probably...
For me, like Death Door and nothing else 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, fair. At least 200 of those games are Hollow Knight.
Yeah. Death Door was one of the games that Devolver Digital published this year that's getting a lot of acclaim. Inscription is another. And yet another of them is Loop Hero, a game that came out for PC and Mac earlier this year. It was developed by... Four Quarters, and John reviewed it very, very early on in the year, and then I reviewed it spoke about it a couple weeks later when I realized you could also play it on Mac. Both of us were like, I don't know if this would ever work as a console game, and then time made fools of us all, because at a recent, Nintendo Direct?
Yeah, I think so,
they announced that Loop Hero is coming to Nintendo Switch, and that is where I've been playing it the last couple weeks. For those who haven't played it before, it is a roguelike game. Where you are essentially a hero making your way in looping around a path from your camp back and back to your camp, and on your way you fight monsters. The monsters drop loot and weapons, and you keep leveling yourself up. And also the cards that you get allow you to change the terrain around you. So you can put like graveyards around you or rocks or trees, and every time you change the terrain. You enable more powerful monsters to inhabit the terrain, which you then fight to get better loot. And as you continue over and over again, there are bosses. There are you can go back to your camp as you complete a loop and upgrade it and upgrade all your stats and everything like that. There's a lot of stuff to do, and I think this is notable for me as a game that I tried to play while DJing this year. And it was just too obvious that I was playing a game. But I've been playing some time on the Switch version, and it was a little bit awkward at first when I was like, oh, okay, so you've got to like hold down the left trigger and that opens the card menu. And if you hold down the right trigger, that opens up the weapon menu, and you can kind of move things around with the joystick as you would a mouse when you hold the buttons down. Mm-hmm. There are a few odd prompts where like they haven't changed the text where it's like, right click this, and you're like, oh, I can't do that, man. It's a Switch.
It's always always funny when I'm playing a game and like it'll be like press triangle, and it's like, I'm on Xbox, guys. Port properly.
Phil Spencer doesn't believe in triangles.
Okay. So would you say you've made it further on Switch than you did on Mac?
I'm about the same. I'm like, I've made it to the first boss both times, and the boss fucking wailed on me, and I never, I did that, and I was like, well, that's me done for the day, and then I haven't opened it since. It's a ton of fun though. I really love the sound effects, which I didn't really appreciate when I was playing it through my PC. Just like as you start a day, like the kind of crunching of your steps on the ground and the whistling of birds and weird monsters. I love the conversations you have with vampires as you fight them, before you fight them.
Yeah, those are great. The little interactions you have when some of the monsters show up are fantastic. Discovering little like almost secret recipes with the cards.
Yes.
Is also like a fantastic part of the gameplay. So would you say, like, having gotten over that initial kind of hurdle of, oh, this is a little bit awkward, does it start to feel natural?
Yeah, no, I was totally used to it by the end. My problem with the game is not so much it's a problem with what the game is, in that it always feels like a very passive game. Like, no matter how much I'm enjoying myself, I always feel like I should be doing something else while I play it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's hard to go, oh, well, I almost beat the boss this time, but... now I'm going to really pay attention for the next, 45 minutes and get myself really powerful so I can take down this boss. But it's just kind of, I don't know. It reminds me a little bit of Cookie Clicker, except you can I don't know. You can die. It's possible to die.
Yeah.
If you don't. And it does require you to kind of pay attention and move things around every 10 to 30 seconds. But
yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it's very easy for your attention to wander. And a lot of the times that's fine, but there will be a 2-second period where you need to have done something. And if you're not paying attention, then, oh, crap.
Yep.
Yeah, they do describe it as like an idle game, essentially. But yes. I don't know, idle games generally, you should be able to completely unfocus and then turn your attention back and do stuff, whereas this is, ah, crap, my dude died.
Yeah, totally.
But good to know that it's found a new home on the Switch, and hopefully...
Yeah, I've only played it on handheld, and you can use the touch screen.
Oh, okay, yep.
Which made a few actions where I was like, how do I do that? Oh, there we go.
That makes perfect sense. But
I've not played it on the TV yet, okay. So I don't know how that translates. Mm. But yeah, like I'd recommend it as a game to play anywhere, to be honest. And this didn't seem like I said, there's a learning curve, but I learned it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean it definitely has that like card game sort of meta to it, where you're like, oh, I need to understand the game above the game to really, you know, kick ass at this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. Well. Like I said, good to hear, you know, holiday season's approaching, people, so buy your loved one Loop Hero on Switch.
Yeah, and it's also cool to see Devolver make sure, like, we always hear about ports being released for Switch just being, like, the worst version of the game.
Yeah.
And, like, I think they made a few sacrifices with the way Death's Door looks, but that means it runs as smooth as it did on the other consoles. For the most part, and I think that's a really good port, and I think this is a really cool and inventive port as well. So well done to the development teams, and I mean, essentially it is Devolver who overlooks it and makes sure they're not going to release something that isn't finished, and like so frequently studios do. So it is cool to see them, you know, make sure that they're beloved games for this year, and hopefully, you know, Inscription, if they can try and manage, I know a lot of it relies on the fact that you are playing a PC in the meta game of Inscription, but
Yeah, actually,
I hope that they figure that out. And this is a good omen for that, because I feel like a lot of people, us included, were like, I don't know how Loop Hero would work on the Switch, and it does.
Cool. Well,
spin that wheel.
Spin that wheel, and it's landed on me talking about XO1.
Rigged.
So, yeah, man, the game's always been rigged. The house always wins, Levens. So last night, you know, when we were discussing recording this episode, I was like, ah, crap. I know I've been playing Moonlighter, but I really want to chalk up something new. I like talking about new games. It's always fun. So I quickly, you know, the reason I haven't played much lately is because December is like the most expensive month of the year. Not only is there Christmas, there's also my wedding anniversary. And just, it was one of those like, oh, bank account's looking a little empty. Can't really, like, I've got games that I want to tick off, but I can't buy them until payday, essentially, which is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was like, ah, look, I'll jump onto Xbox. I'll check out Game Pass. I'm sure there's something on there. And I was happy to see that XO1 was on there, because I've seen, like, XO1 is a game that bubbles up every once in a while on social media because of how, like, basically how it looks and how it plays is so easily understandable and visual appealing on those kind of channels. Like, I think the dude made a TikTok account for his game and wound up getting like a huge amount of attention for it just because of how it looks and how it plays. So XO1 is a game where you play as a sort of interplanetary probe or a space probe that is exploring these planets. It is of alien origin. It was built on Earth. There's sort of a story that is told throughout the game through like these little snippets of garbled conversation between people, and the general story is there was a mission to explore Jupiter that went horribly, fatally wrong, and only one person survived, you know, one man survived, and upon his return to Earth he was plagued by visions of an alien device, and so he kind of had it built, and it uses it to explore these other planets, and the whole idea he has is that he can somehow bring the crew he lost back by using this probe. That's the overarching story. The actual gameplay itself is you play as this probe. This probe is a ball. It is a ball, a self-propelling ball, that if you pull the right trigger, it increases the gravity of the ball tenfold. If you release the trigger, the gravity of the ball is somewhat like the gravity you get on the moon. Once you kind of get the ball going at a fair clip, if you go off kind of a little hill or something, the ball will go into the air. You can pull the left trigger and the ball turns into a disc. And you can use that disc to glide. You can double jump while you're kind of in the disc to gain more height. You pull both triggers at the same time. You turn into the disc and you dive. So you can do kind of like swoops to pick up speed and stuff like that. Essentially, do you remember, it would have been, God, a decade ago, there was a short period where maybe you and I, like I definitely, you maybe, and a bunch of our friends were obsessed with a game called Tiny Wings.
Oh, yeah, the little bird.
The little bird where you tap the screen and it dives and you need to kind of like nail little valleys and like...
Trajectory, yeah.
Yeah, nail that trajectory. It is very similar to that, essentially.
I like... That was pretty similar to... Was it Alba's...
Aldo's Adventure?
That's the one. Yeah.
A little bit. This is very much about like nailing that kind of drop into a valley and launching back out of it again.
Okay, cool.
Whereas Aldo's is more about like racking up tricks and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so you, on each alien planet that you land on, you can see a bright blue beam far in the distance. You need to kind of make your way across this landscape, get to that beam, and the beam is it's like a big kind of spire that when you hit the blue part of it, it shoots you into the sky and teleports you to the next level.
Cool.
Accompanied by an absolute wealth of just trippy visuals. It took me a little while to kind of get into how this probe moved and really get a feel for like, when should I increase gravity? When should I dive? How long will my disc, you know, how long will the energy of my disc hold out before it turns back into a ball and I start, you know, I lose kind of my aerodynamic abilities. But once I kind of got that a little bit more underhand, it just became this really fun, interesting experience. Fun because of the way that you move, and interesting because the alien worlds that you are exploring have been really well crafted, and they're kind of fascinating to move through. You know, you'll be speeding across this, like speeding and diving and launching off these dunes in a desert. And then in the distance, these huge alien structures that like have no discernible purpose, but they're just giant like geometric shapes in the desert kind of come out of the distance, and you sort of make your way past them. And there's other planets that are just covered in water, and you can like skip your disc along the surface of the water like a stone. It's so cool. The feeling, like it reminded me a little bit of the Outer Wilds, that yep. kind of sense of exploring a new planet and maybe not the same intricacies as the Outer Wilds, but just that general feeling of like, oh my God, I'm on somewhere completely alien to Earth, essentially.
Yeah, cool.
If anybody listening is partial, wink wink, to the Devil's Lettuce, this is absolutely a game to burn one down to. Like, it's very calm. It's not like twitchy or anything. It has like a very kind of ambient soundtrack. It's got some fantastic visuals. Like, disclaimer, don't do anything illegal, but if you're in a place where it is legal, give it a rip. See what you think.
Give it.
I certainly, you know, if I lived in LA or Colorado, I would definitely, if I didn't have a 7-month-old daughter, I would definitely give that a try. But so it's I've told all the details.
That's the squarest you've ever sounded.
Yeah, I know. I love it. So it's developed by...
I've never heard you call it Devil's Lettuce in my life before.
If you like that dank-ass weed, listener, get into it. It's developed by Expletive, Expletiv, and published by Future Friends Games. And continuing my streak, it's an Australian game.
Oh, wow, cool.
Developed in South Australia. It was weird. I was like watching the end credits, and in the special thanks section, the name Ashley Ringrose popped up. And I was like, wait a minute, that's my former boss. What's he doing in there? And did a Google. I was like, oh, it makes sense. It's an Australian game.
Also, South Australia, where most of Australia's devil's lettuce crops come from.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. That explains why it looks the way it looks. It took me 2 hours and 40 minutes to finish. And cool. That was like, I was not necessarily speeding through it. I took my time at some sections. There are some, like, there are some collectibles in the game. There are little, like, orbs you can pick up that increase the energy that your craft has and allows you to glide for longer. Some of them are kind of difficult to get, but they're not necessary generally to the game. You can grab them if you feel like a completionist. But goddamn, it felt cool. You know, you get a bunch of height and then you dive and your craft breaks the sound barrier and the screen goes all like red because of how fast you're going. Just really good. Really kind of like calming and thrilling at the same time.
Yeah, awesome.
That's XO1. It's available on... Well, I had it on Game Pass. Yeah, it's Xbox exclusive and also Windows.
There you go. And also it's a... If anyone is only listening to this without actually looking at the show description, it's spelt EXOONE,
mm-hmm.
not XO1.
Good point.
That's what I was trying to like Google earlier.
Levin's like an idiot. Spin the damn wheel.
Okay, so we have some spinning the wheel and boom, wouldn't you believe it, it's landed on message from our sponsor.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thanks, message from our sponsor. Now I'm going to talk about Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon.
Hell yes.
This is a game that's made by two developers. It's published by Yacht Club Games, who are the makers and creators of all of the Shovel Knight games thus far. And of course, all those games until this point have been featured in one collection, which is called the Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. I think one of the essential Switch games. I mean, games. I think it's on every console. I think it's just an essential game that everyone should own, especially when they release it. When they put it up in a sale, you can get hours and hours of like pixel perfect platforming precision for very, very cheap. If you pick up it on a sale, but even not on a sale, it's tremendous value. Some of my favorite platforming experiences over the last years have been playing all the Shovel Knight games. And the Pocket Dungeon is the first of two games that they are collaborating with other studios on to create new Shovel Knight games. So we've got Pocket Dungeon, which came out last week. And then soon, I don't think there's a date attached to it yet, but soon we're getting another variation on the Shovel Knight formula called Shovel Knight Dig. And Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon is made with a group of devs called Vine. And what are they made before this? I'm gonna pull up their webpage and get back to everybody.
Vine. Okay.
So they've made Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon and looks like a whole bunch of other weird, cool games. But supposedly, the Yacht Club team saw a beta build of Pocket Dungeon, and it was originally with kind of like nondescript soldiers and skeletons and stuff inside of it, and they were like, hey, this would work really well as a Shovel Knight game, do you want to partner with this and we will make it an official Shovel Knight game. And I love collaborations like that, like where it's like someone seeing something and, you know, instead of it forcing two things together that might not work, it's like, oh, this would actually be a really natural fit. And it means more people will get, you'll get more eyes and people playing this new game. It reminds me a lot, even in gameplay too, of Cadence of Hyrule.
Okay.
The what was that one called again? The original game.
Necrodancer.
That's right, Crypt of the Necrodancer, the Cadence of Hyrule, which I loved. And of course, that was the Crypt of the Necrodancer team working with Nintendo to make an actual proper Zelda game. This is, yeah, I guess, like, you know, another indie developer working with Yacht Club to make a very cool puzzle game. And it's, so the Pocket Dungeon refers to like a grid of, I guess it's like 8x8. Basically, Shovel Knight is chilling, and then he gets thrown into a portal, which he's stuck in a pocket dungeon, and he meets someone called Puzzle Knight, who is also stuck in the pocket dungeon. He enlists the help of Shovel Knight to help get them out, because Shovel Knight can use his shovel to make his way through the little puzzle rooms that are kind of like Tetris. You have, you know, blocks and things falling from the top of your of the screen, but it's not always blocks. In fact, more often than not, it is immediately recognizable Shovel Knight enemies falling from the top of the screen. And as they fall, you basically, all you're doing is you are using left, right, up and down to move around. But if you go up against something and then push, like if they're on your left and you push left, for example, you will attack that thing. And if it's an enemy, yes, you can take 1 point off, but they will take 1 point off your health too, because you have 5 points of health as you start each game. And so the aim of the game is to stay alive. You want to try and have all the enemies line up, because if you attack one of them, any of the same enemy that's adjacent to it will also take that same amount of damage.
Okay.
And also floating down, you have like power health. So when you're low on health, you can, you know, make your way up to where the health is and replenish yourself, then go back down to where all the action is. You can select at the start of the game whether you want this to play like a roguelite. So once you die, you immediately go back to the beginning. Or you can choose to play it like a puzzle game where once you die, you float to the top of the screen and then you can keep playing. But it's a puzzle game in that if like, just like Tetris, if the screen gets filled with blocks or enemies, the game then is over.
Right.
So more often, I chose that mode just because I love puzzle games. But more often than not, if I die and float to the top, in the time that it takes me to float up from the top, the puzzle dungeon gets filled and I get game over anyway. Luckily for me, you are collecting gems the entire time you are playing Pocket Dungeon. And what's really cool about this is that you can be very calculated in the way you move around. You can't, the time stays pretty still. When you like, things don't fall as quickly if you stand still, so does everything in the dungeon. But the more you move around, you turn on a gem multiplier, because when you take out a big row of enemies or things of the same stuff that's all next to each other, you like, it drops heaps of gems. And the quicker you are moving around and killing things, the more gems you're going to get. When you die, you can go to a store, and you can buy items that will then appear in your pocket dungeons in the future that will then, some of them are permanent. So I now have like 7 units of health instead of 5.
Cool.
And little things like that. But very excitingly, they've included a room in like kind of like your main camp that you go back to when you die, where you can buy warp locations. It's a horse guy with a cannon, and you can buy, for quite a lot of gems, you can buy like warp locations for every level that you've played so far. I believe there are 10 in all. I've made it through the first 8. I've unlocked King Knight, and I can't remember which other one, maybe Treasure Knight. I think Treasure Knight, yeah. And they each have different abilities to Shovel Knight. With King Knight, you can hold A and then hold in any direction, and you make a big powerful swooping attack at anything in front of you. And Treasure Knight, you're much stronger when you attack things from below, which is an interesting way to play the game. There are like 12 knights in the Shovel Knight universe. I don't know how many of them have made it to this game, but it looks like every time you get a new one, it drastically changes the way you can strategize and play the game. I'm really enjoying it. I think it looks really, really good. I love all of the little extra tidbits that they've given you to make it like still a very hard but approachable game. I think the sprite work is wonderful, as you would expect for any Yacht Club game. The music is like variations on what I think are very iconic Yacht Club, Shovel Knight compositions, but I don't think they're as good as the original. So it's like, I wish they really leaned hard into them, these being like really fun remixes, like very chip-tuney of the, you know, the 8-bit originals.
Mm-hmm,
but
sure.
It's still good, but I just, you know when you're like, oh yeah, this variation is nowhere near as good as the song I just wish they were playing instead.
I recognize it, but I don't care for it.
Yeah, totally. But look, man, as someone that like loved the kind of puzzle game that came with King of Cards and wished that got its own standalone release or even like a mobile port, this is really scratching the puzzle game itch that I have only really like tried to scratch this year with Zookeeper.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
and this is a profoundly but more entertaining and challenging game than Zookeeper. It's definitely a game where you're going to die a lot, even with the warp stuff. Like sometimes I last 20 seconds in the latest dungeon that I've unlocked. So which I think is like the 9th or 10th dungeon.
But is it the sort of thing where you're like, I know. It's not like, oh crap, I'm just dying. Do you go like, okay, I know kind of what I want to change on my next run that might help me stay alive?
It's more like me going like, God damn it, how the fuck did that happen? it's just honestly, it's basically every enemy attacks differently. And a little bit of information comes up on the screen when you are next to them, but I'm always so in the moment of gameplay. I definitely move around a lot that I don't read it as closely as I should, okay. And so I miss what their weak spot's going to be, what their attack pattern is going to be. They do give you all that info though, and it is just it's just going to be a matter of, you know, case of me, trial and error.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. It's great, man. It's really, really great. A very cool idea for a puzzle game. This is not just like a typical match 3 puzzle game, which there are way too many of on all app stores. This is very much its own unique thing that is really, I think, benefited from having the Shovel Knight brand attached to it. You know, Shovel Knight shows up in a lot of indie games as like, you know, a fighter or a trophy or whatever, but this feels like a fully fledged Shovel Knight title. And I think because the treasure trove contains so many different ways to play with those characters, this does not feel out of place with that character at all.
Yeah. And you're playing on Switch?
Yeah, I'm playing on Switch.
Cool.
I think it's only on Switch.
Ah, okay. I was desperately like hoping it would come to phones because it sounds like such a phone game, but
I think it's very reliant on it's because of this, how quick you need to be, I don't think it would work as a
okay.
Like moving around, because you're moving around those 8x8 panels like a lot, unless you were like physically dragging Shovel Knight around on the screen. I'm not sure if it could work because, you know, virtual touchpads suck, virtual D-pads.
True, but then I look at something like Grindstone, which is not necessarily the same game, but it does work perfectly in the mobile environment. Anyway, it's available on Switch.
Very different because you're moving blocks around,
right?
You're moving. You know, you're swiping the pattern that you want to take.
Sure.
That game was made for phones. This one is definitely made for consoles. Mm-hmm. So I'm wrong. Sorry, it is available on Steam for sure. Google is telling me that it's available on PlayStation as well.
Interesting.
So
okay.
Maybe it's everywhere, but I've been playing it on Switch. I've played all the other Shovel Knight games on Switch too, and I would recommend that everyone picks it up. It's a great handheld game. Very, very good.
Hell yeah. Now I mean, we could spin the wheel at this point, Levins, or you could tell us about Dust Biters. Which would you prefer?
Obviously, I like pledge my allegiance to the wheel.
Right, okay. We're spinning the wheel. Look at that, it came up on you talking about Dust Biters.
Crazy, man. So this is why I love this wheel. So Dust Biters is a game that I backed on Kickstarter much earlier in the year. Completely forgot about, like all the best Kickstarter campaigns. And then it showed up in the mail randomly yesterday. It's so cool when you're like, all I'm expecting mail-wise at the moment is like Christmas presents that I bought for family members and my kids and stuff. So when something showed up, I was like, what is this? And oh, wow, it's for me.
Merry Christmas.
Very great, great, great moment. So the team behind this game I mentioned earlier is
Jan Willem Niemann.
Willem Niemann. Is it Niemann? Sorry, I like saying Niemann. Yeah, but I'm sure, yeah, you're right. That J is probably probably silent.
Sure.
He was 50% of the company Vlambeer and has worked on previous All the Small Game hits as Disc Room, Minute, Nuclear Throne, and Ridiculous Fishing, but so many more on top of that. He made this game with Terry Velman, who was the illustrator and game designer who made Sludge Life.
Hell yeah.
And also did all the art for Disc Room, plus High Hell and Heavy Bullets. Then we have Robbie Fraser, who is from South Africa, an independent game designer there who worked on Broforce and Genital Jousting. And they've all been making this with IM 8-Bit, who published basically, you know, put everything together. And they do lots of awesome... you know, physical video game stuff and merch and stuff like that.
They are,
it's a great team.
They are my favorite source for vinyl soundtracks.
There you go. We do know that John is a fan of those. So in a box of Dust Biters, which is incredibly well illustrated, in a way that like I would compare to someone like Chris Burnham or Frank Quitely even, if you are a big comic book head. A little, and then like very, very big colors, like what I would expect from like an Andrew McLean headlopper kind of book. This is like excellent artwork. And it is a game where you have 21 cards. It's a two-player game. And you have a basically like... One, like each player is given, I think it's four cards each, and one, like that you start a line of cars. So it's about basically a line of gang cars in like a dust storm. Think Mad Max.
Okay.
What do you call a line of cars again?
Convoy.
Convoy. Thank you. And so you take turns. At the end of each turn, the last car in the convoy is lost to the dust. So basically you want to use every single card has a different power. It will be like, hey, the card behind this one, if you enable that power, is destroyed. Or you can swap the card at the front of the convoy to the back. And so you're trying to save your own cards while destroying the other player's cards. There are so many different ways. You basically get like three of four actions that you can do each turn. It's one of those ones where like you have to really pay attention to what, like it's really, really easy to learn the rules of, but because each car has its own rules, you have to be very aware of what's in play at the moment. For example, there is one card that any card that it's next to is rendered useless.
Wow.
You can't move it. And that includes your own cards. So there are cards that you don't really benefit from having in your hand as much as some of the other ones, and then there are some that are so OP, and then what some like, you know, like very, very like crazy ones where it's like enable this card to add the, because once a car is destroyed you add it to the wrecking pile face up, and then some cards allow you to take the card on the top of the wrecking pile and add it to your hand, so you know if you can strategize and send a card of yours to the back to have it destroyed, only to then re-add it to your hand if you have that card. It's cool. It's lots of fun strategy, and no two games are the same. And you know, you have to be very aware of what cards the second player has, and sometimes you pay too much attention to what they have and what you have than what you have, or you pay too much attention to saving your cards at the back instead of putting new cards at the front, because every turn you put a new card of yours at the front, so you can kind of moving the convoy forward. It's very cool.
So easy to learn, lots of nuance.
Yeah, and excellent art. I would definitely recommend this. You can still buy it through Kickstarter, or you can buy it through im8bit.com.
Yes.
Definitely recommend it. It's so beautifully, like the collection's just so nice. Obviously the artwork's great, but it's in this beautiful box. It comes with excellent looking little like comic book player's manual. And the cards themselves are just like just colourful and fantastic.
Yeah, it's definitely something on my to cop list.
Yeah, cop it up.
All right, Levins, two more left. Spin that wheel.
You've got the wheel. Everyone knows you have the wheel.
Who gave me the wheel? Why did that happen?
We established this at the start of the episode.
All right.
Continuity is important.
All right, it's landed on me talking about Moonlighter. Now, Levins, you've had a run at Moonlighter before, correct?
I think we both did.
Yeah.
Right?
So from, I mean, this would have been a while ago, like maybe 2 years or so. When was Moonlighter released? Do you remember your time with it?
Yeah, so I remember, like, you're like a little dude who gets put in charge of a shop.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to get things to stock in your shop, you have to go and fight monsters in dungeons.
Yeah.
And the dungeons are procedurally generated, I think.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And then you come back up and then you... This is where the game lost me. All about, like you know, hunting in the dungeons, running a shop, that's great. But the game has you put the prices on all of the things that you find in the dungeons.
Yes.
And you're meant to know if you've chosen the right price or not by the customer's reactions to your prices.
Yes.
If it's too expensive, they'll scoff. If it's too cheap, I feel like you get... What are they think less of you as a shopkeeper.
No. If it's less than it should be... Because the way you tell what they're thinking is like a little kind of... I guess you call it an emoticon of sorts pops up next to their head. And, you know, if it's way overpriced, it's a sad face with, like, blue lines on it to make it look like it's crying. If it's way too cheap, it's a very excited smiley face with coins instead of eyes.
Right.
Yeah. And it sucks seeing that one because you're like, ooh, I just lost money.
Yeah, I remember playing it and really enjoying the, like, you know, very tough dungeon stuff. But then getting back up and just being like, oh, I don't have the time to invest in figuring out how to run a shop. So I dodged it.
Yeah, so that was pretty much my experience. I just remember being like, the dungeon exploring part was fun, but the shop part confused me. And because you really need to like upgrade your weapons and your armor and everything to properly explore the dungeon, and I was bollocking up the shop part, I was never really able to properly enjoy the dungeon part of it. So obviously It was released in 2018, just to get the details out of the way. Released in 2018, developed by Digital Sun, or the developers, it says here, Digital Sun, 11-Bit Studios, and Crunching Koalas, weirdly enough. I get the feeling one of those is probably the people that did the port. No, developed by Spanish indie studio Digital Sun. There we go.
Crunching Koalas are a porting studio,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, so I remember playing it a little bit at the time and just being like, okay, this shop stuff's really confusing me. They kind of run you through it at the beginning of the game, and I guess I didn't pay too much attention about it, and then got really confused. And just, it was one of those games where I'm like, I'm going to put this to the side. There's other games I want to play. However, over the years, I've seen Moonlighter pop up on so many lists of people being like, oh my God, this game's fantastic. You got to play it. Like, what an amazing Switch game this is. It's gotten DLC. Like, it just seemed to have this enduring popularity that I was like, you know what? I want to go back and play it again and actually pay attention and do it properly this time and see what the hype is all about.
So, well, for me, the big draw card of going back to it was that learning that it's the same composer as Death's Door. It's David Fenn, who is one of the developers of Death's Door. He did the soundtrack for both these games.
There you go. So I dived in over the last week, and this time I actually was like, you know what? I'm going to throw myself into the shop element of the game and actually get that going. And I got to say, I kind of get it now. I kind of get it. Like, the two halves of the game, the shopkeeper part and the dungeon exploring part, I see how they both fit together. I see how they're kind of this interlocked Skinner box of, you know, oh, I want to get better at exploring the dungeons to get better loot so I can sell more at my shop and buy better weapons and equipment and stuff to make it easier to explore the dungeon and get better stuff for over and over and over, loop, loop, loop. And I've definitely fallen into that Stardew-esque or Stardew Valley-esque thing of just one more round. Like, I'll yep. finish a day at the shop and be like, oh, I'm so close to an upgrade, I'll just dive into the dungeon once more and find the resources I need or get some stuff to make a bit more money. Or if I've just finished a dungeon run, I'll be like, I'll just do one more shop day kind of thing. So it's definitely, it has that potential for that late night, like, oh crap, it's 1 a.m, what did I do sort of thing. That being said, I can see why it's a good game, but it escapes me why some people think it's a great game. Because the combat during the dungeon part is fine, but it's not excellent. You know what I mean? Like, it's it feels a little bit clunky. You know, you have a dodge roll, but the dodge roll always feels like it triggers just a split second after you actually need it to trigger, and that kind of stuff. You know, so the dungeon exploration part is just good, and the shop managing part, I don't know what I want from it, whether I want more nuance or less nuance. It definitely, like, it just starts to get a bit frustrating. Like, the experimentation to find the right price for your items gets a bit frustrating, especially when there's, like, you know, you're keeping watch for these little emotions that they pop up. If you've got three people buying stuff at the same time, it kind of gets a little difficult to track. What did they think about that? Have I set it at the right price? You know, like, because it records the prices that you sell it for in your notebook, but that's only if the item that you're selling is not popular at that point in time or isn't bought by a rich person. If either right. of those two things happen, it doesn't record the price. So it can be a little bit difficult going, now hold on, what did I sell this for last time? Was it popular? Was it that kind of thing? All that being said, like, this is not me saying it's a garbage game. Like I said, I finally get the game itself, and it's something that I will definitely keep playing because I want to see it through. I want to, like, as you play through, you unlock more dungeons to play through, with the kind of end goal being you collect four keys, which unlocks kind of this huge dungeon in town. I do want to see it through till there. I am enjoying it enough to keep playing it. The point I was trying to make was, as I said earlier, I just don't get why it's, some people are like, oh my god, this is the greatest game that's ever been. It can't just be the music.
do you have anything to say about the music?
I mean, it's nice, but at the same time, I'm so busy going, like, I'm being attacked by eight things at once, or why the hell didn't they buy that? How have I priced that wrong? That, like, it fades into the background a bit. But when I do hear it, it is nice.
Awesome. So that's Moonlighter, which I believe is available everywhere now. Mm-hmm. And what's left? Me talking about Solar Ash? I mean, I've got the wheel behind me.
One thing left on the wheel, Levins. The whole wheel says Solar Ash. I'll spin it just out of, you know, just cause, but get into it.
So Solar Ash, a game that I reviewed last week. I was up to the final level last week and kind of contemplating, do I go back and get all of the missing parts to all the suits that I've gotten so far, find all these little extra bits so I can finish the game on 100% completion. And I was like, oh, I could just finish it. I'll only be playing it for 15 more minutes. Or I could spend like 2 hours and just, you know, be the most me person I could be. And that's what I did.
Hey.
I went back because the basically, like, there are logs that you have to find, like, not like tree logs, sure. like drops from
text logs kind of thing.
Yeah, text logs, or, like, you know, like audio logs of the final messages of other people in your crew who explored these areas before you got there, and you have to figure out, you know, what happened to them. And every time you find one of their drops, you also get a different piece of armor. And each piece of armor gets, like, every different suit of armor has a different kind of, like, cool ability. Like, you know, you can there's shorter cooldown time between your boosts or things of that nature. I'd missed almost all of the suit parts in the early levels. I spoke last week about how, like, maybe I was missing, like, the language of the game, because they do kind of drop clues. There's a symbol that's near where all of your crew members have been, but I just think that the as you progress, like, they're a lot easier to find, because the final map, the final world I was in, I found everything, like, it's one with the most pieces of armor in it, and I found them all really easily. And then that armor, actually, when you wear it, it tells you where all the other drops are throughout the game.
Very handy.
In, like, little, yeah, so I think they do it very purposefully, and some of them are very trickily hidden throughout all the levels. So going back and doing that, you know, with like, my full shields and just, like, you know, with a much better idea of how movement in the game works was really, really cool. The ending, I struggled to like care too much about the story in the game. You know, you're the last of your species, trying to either reverse time or stop more destruction from happening. And you're uncovering these logs. You're trying to like turn this robot who you talk to, this AI, back on. It's like, you know, pretty par for the course sci-fi stuff. But the way it ends is pretty great. This big conversation between you and someone else who you encounter every time you defeat one of the bosses, and you know who the relationship that person has to you. And then yeah, the big final boss fight was really satisfying. I don't think it was the most difficult in the game. I think the most difficult boss in the game was the final world's boss. I found pretty tricky, because again, you're not so much attacking it again and again. It's more of a an obstacle course that you'd complete on the boss itself, because it's kind of like Shadow of the Colossus style. You're like gliding around the boss and slashing at its weak points in a limited time frame.
Sure.
And a lot of my frustration with not being able to do certain things came from like the camera angle kind of not showing the 3D object that I needed to go down or across on. There were a few like frustrated, like, oh my God, moments where I would just keep dying at the same point in a boss battle. But I didn't have too much trouble with the final one, and I found the ending really satisfying. Got that notification saying, congratulations, you finished with 100% completion.
Ooh.
Felt really good about it. I definitely like Solar Ash. I talked about it last week as like, you know, the latest in a series of games that I've recently discovered I'm a massive fan of, and that is games in which you play a woman who can float, making her way through a wasteland, looking for survivors. That of those three games that I've played in the last year, while I love Solar Ash, it's my least favorite of the three of them. I still really liked it, and I reckon you'll probably see it show up on my top 10 of the year.
Ooh.
But I would say number 3 Solar Ash, number 2 Sable, and number 1 Pathless. Sable's the least like the three of those games, but it does fit the metric that I described earlier. Best soundtrack by far. Solar Ash worst soundtrack. Pathless second best.
How many other different ways can we slice this top 3?
Yeah, look, I'm kind of making that point to say that like Solar Ash is really good, but it's bizarre to me that Annapurna published this and The Pathless when The Pathless kind of does everything better.
Yeah.
But look, the games are different enough. It's just it's very difficult not to compare them. Especially when the same publisher put the both of them out.
Yeah, understandable.
I'm satisfied with my time with this game. I think I spent maybe like 7 or 8 hours on it. It was a $60 game for me. So you know, if that is a big price point that you'd expect more for, maybe wait for this one to get on sale. But if you do like the if you do like 3D platformers, and especially ones that like, you know, I've been disappointed by a lot of Sonic games in my lifetime, this kind of does a take on what a 3D Sonic game could do. Like, you know, you're gliding quite quickly through clouds and over bosses, and having like mini quick time events where you have to quickly get to an area. Like you've got a great button when you push circle, it slows time down, and then you can zoom in and attack certain things. Really, really fun. I liked the regular enemies. And just zooming around, creating havoc in these cool sky worlds was very fun. I loved the atmosphere of all the levels too. I like a lot about this game.
Sure,
that's for sure. Yeah. I had massive expectations for it because of how much of a Hyperlight Drifter fan I am. And I think like atmosphere wise, like gameplay wise, that's just a far stronger game to me. But Solar Ash is definitely worthy of your attention.
Hell yeah. Man, there's a lot of games covered on this app.
I mean, do you want me to just quickly... I'll give quick updates because I reckon I'll probably talk about it further next year, but I'm making my way through a lot of the games that I missed or like, you know, didn't get all the way through that as far as I would have liked. I am in like the last 5 levels or so of Flynn, Son of Crimson.
Okay.
The game just gets better and better. I know a lot of people tapped out because it's a Game Pass game, and like the first like 5 levels I just like, you know, pretty by the numbers platforming, but it does get way harder. You have way more abilities that you need to quickly switch between to get through these very long platforming levels with heaps and heaps of enemies that you need to, you know, it's like a brawler in those parts because you both have to, like, you have to chip away at them and dodge really, really well. I find it really satisfying and another beautiful looking game. That game was published by Humble Bundle, Humble Games, who have put out so many of my favorite games of this year. They also put out Unsighted, which is a game that so many people have told me to start. It's a Metroidvania game with like kind of like a cyberpunk kind of vibe where you play as like a robot and the humans have destroyed all the other robots. And so you've got like this finite amount of time to get all of these, you know, trinkets and shit that you need to get to complete the game. It's very fun. It was made by Studio Pixel Punk and came out earlier this year. It's on Game Pass too. Every Humble game I think that came out this year is on Game Pass. That was a great deal on Xbox's behalf. Yeah, man, this is a game that we almost went through all of 2021 without me going to, and I love what I've played so far. Really, really fun game.
Nice. All right.
A lot of choice in that game too. There's like, it's funny, like, you know, Solar Ash has, you play through a game where, you know, it's a pretty linear path. And then at the end, it's like, do you want to do this or this? Like, just as you fight the final boss.
Right.
You know, I feel like games so often do that. Oh, you know, it's actually like, you know, it's very, very choice reliant. But in this game, you can't, I don't think you can save everybody in Unsighted. They all have like basically you can see how many hours they have left to live.
Wild.
And, which is very crazy. And like, yeah, you can collect things that can, you can use to give you, you can also see how many hours you have to live too. And so as you find these resources that can extend your life by 24 hours at a time, do you spend them on yourself so you can complete more of the game? Or do you try and save the people who you've made important connections with? Really, really interesting game. I'm looking forward to talking more about Unsighted in the future. Just some good shit, man. Good. If you like choice in games, this look, it reminds me a bit of Chrono Trigger, I have to admit, as well.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, which is a big up. Man, it's been a fucking great year for games, is what I'm trying to say.
It really has. I'm having, like, I keep endlessly reshuffling my top 10 list.
I think my top 3 has been decided and was decided pretty early on. Like, I keep going back to 3 very special games to me from this year. We are going to have such a good time doing that top 10.
Yeah.
I wonder if we'll be able to pick each other's top 3s this year. Possibly. I would love to do, we should do like, make sure we do other awards like best publisher of the year.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Favorite game from 2020 that we played this
year. Yeah. Favorite game we caught up on the next year.
Yeah. And of course all of the games that we wish we got around to play.
Oh yeah.
That list is going to be enormous.
Honorable mentions and stuff we missed. Like I'm now at the point where I'm like, do I try tick off stuff I've missed, or do I just accept that I'm not going to make it and leave them for later where I might enjoy them without the pressure of, oh my God, will this make the list?
Yeah. So look, if you'd like to contribute to our best of the year episode, which is 2 weeks away at this point, I would love to hear from you. You can email us at allthesmallgames@gmail.com or join our Discord by heading to patreon.com/allthesmallgames. Not only do you get all these bonus episodes we've done and a couple that we're about to do, you also get access to our Discord community where you can talk about indie games nonstop. It was especially fun watching everyone be immensely disappointed as they watched the Video Game Awards.
Yes.
Last Friday, I'm so happy I didn't watch that. It was like my first time in 3 years that I was like, I'm not going to watch the Game Awards this year. And I'm so happy with myself that I didn't. It is such a profound waste of time.
I kind of had fun because I have Twitch as one of my clients.
Of course, yeah.
And the two people that I, you know, are my contacts at Twitch, we just sat on Slack and like peanut paneled the whole thing. So it was amusing in that sense, but there were so many like blood pressure spiking instances of like, what the fuck do you mean that one? Like, how the hell is that winning over this kind of thing? I mean, Kena Bridge of the Spirits, I've heard really good things, but I was like, oh boy, that was up against some strong competition.
And it won both. Yeah, and again, that's another game that I'm like, shit, do I want to try and at least put a couple hours into that one?
Yeah.
Before we record. But I was like, oh, surely it'll go on sale before the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
But look, you know, it's a bad mentality. We do technically make a little bit of money from the podcast. Maybe I should spend that little bit of money on Kena Bridge of Spirits before we do our Best of the Year episode. In any case, it's a great time to join us over at Patreon, get all of our bonus episodes from the year, and contribute to our Best of the Game of the Year episode. You can suggest some weird categories for us to announce our favorite games or composers or characters from 2021 inside. Of course, we'd love to hear from you over email, which Ryan has done this week, allthesmallgames@gmail.com. If you want to be like Ryan and write to us, he says, "Hey there, John and Levdog. I'm Ryan, and I'm trying to pick out a game for my partner, but don't know many goal-based games like Animal Crossing, narrative-based games, or games like World of Warcraft on the Switch, since that's just not a console I own. You both always have some amazing games in your rotation and wanted to hear your thoughts on your favorites of those genres. As always, absolutely love the show and wish you only the best holiday season and a fruitful new year."
Ooh,
thanks, Ryan.
Fruitful. Love it.
Okay. Goal-based games, I would say Stardew Valley is the very obvious one.
100%.
And a slightly less obvious one is Spiritfarer.
Okay.
I think combines the, like, you know, goal-based, you know, collecting and farming and creating and crafting with the second thing that you asked for a recommendation for, a narrative-based game, because the narrative of that game is very good. You're essentially like helping spirits make their way to the afterlife on a big boat.
Yes.
That you have to maintain yourself.
I would make the suggestion of Graveyard Keeper.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very much like, it's, you know, it's sort of a twisted take on Stardew Valley. Not, I mean, it's not like full Juggalo, but it is like, it does peddle a little bit in darker humor. But it does have a very full, like, Juggalo, strong narrative hook to it, which you know, keeps you going in those games. I mean, that's the thing. I would throw Moonlighter in there, but Moonlighter doesn't really have that strong narrative, which I think is another reason why I don't gel with it quite as much.
Right.
But yeah, Graveyard Keeper, I've had a lot of fun with over time.
Yep. For narrative games, I think the best narrative-based games that I've played on the Switch, Undertale and the sequels Deltarune, I think are excellent. I feel like we don't talk about... I mean, Chicory is another game that the developer has made this year that is on PlayStation 5. But before he made this one, he made a game called... What the fuck was it called, John? With the Bard.
Mm. Neversong? No, not Neversong. Wander Song.
Wander Song.
Yes.
Wander Song. I think is an excellent, really, really uplifting and lovely narrative-based game that anyone could play. I don't think it's particularly difficult platformer-wise. Some fun puzzles. And unlike Chicory, it doesn't quite overstate. Chicory is way too long on the tooth.
Mm-hmm.
Wander Song is way more chapter-based, even though Chicory is too, but this is like very much like a linear chapter-by-chapter. Whereas like Chicory is kind of like a Metroidvania-esque kind of thing, but I think Wander Song is my favorite game from that developer and a great one on Switch.
There you go.
As for games like World of Warcraft, I don't know if we're your best bets for that one.
I mean, look, I can throw some in, kind of. Honestly, they're not exactly the same in that they're not RTSs, but I think you'll find that the Kingdom Rush series really scratches that itch.
Okay.
I mean, it is about kind of like building in the same way that World of Warcraft is. You just don't have necessarily control over your units. But I mean, I'm like, Kingdom Rush Frontiers just appeared on Apple Arcade and I've been replaying it and having a great time. There was a game I was messing with a while ago called They Are Billions, which is like an RTS set in a like zombie apocalypse. Had a bit of fun with that, which is good. But yeah, generally, like, I don't know, RTS are real-time strategy is games that we generally don't have much truck with, I guess, because
and indies very rarely make MMOs as well.
So. Oh yeah, 100%. Oh, World of Warcraft. Okay, not straight, yeah. Warcraft. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
no MMOs, thanks.
But hopefully the other suggestions were helpful.
Yeah.
That's it for the episode. Thank you so much, Ryan, for writing in. And please do the same if you would like to get in touch with us before the end of the year. Allthesmallgames@gmail.com is our email address. You can find us at Twitter. We are at AllTheSmallGame. On Facebook, we are facebook.com/AllTheSmallGames. John is on Twitter at 16tacos. He's on Instagram as that too, as am I, at LevDog on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next week for the 101st episode of All the Small Games. Thank you for listening to all 100 episodes of this podcast with us. And if you didn't, go back and listen.
Yeah, they're all there.
Yeah, they're all there. Thanks so much, guys. See you later.
See ya.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.